Accession number 27079, Reel 6.
Mr. Shaw, Reel 6. You mentioned that there are a large number of naval craft amongst the convoy. Do you recall any of the names of the vessels?
Yes. Gotta mention the big ones first. HMS Nelson and HMS Rodney, the battleships. Aircraft carriers, Eagle, Indomitable. I think it was the Illustrious. It was three aircraft carriers. Cruisers, about half a dozen. Nigeria, Manchester, Cairo. Sometimes it comes immediately to mind. And 22 destroyers, I'll never remember all the names of them. I've got the Ledbury, the Penn, and the Bramham that did most of the towing when we got into Malta. They're the three that sticks in my mind. We were talking to the skippers and the crew of them regular, so we knew them quite well.
Was the convoy formed in England, in English waters?
No, well, it would be out on the coast, off the coast of Ireland in the Atlantic. Because going out of the channel from Glasgow, and there wasn't room really to spread out. When we got out into the Atlantic, we formed up into columns. Everybody knew the station, you know, we had diagrams where all the ships were, and you got tucked in behind the other ships.
And whereabouts in the convoy was the Ohio?
It was, there was four columns, and she was in the second column from the right, behind the Wymarama.
And, of course, obviously you then set sail. At this time again, you knew you were going to Malta by this
point. Oh, you knew that by this time, yeah.
Did you know the code name of the convoy, Pedestal? Had you been told that?
Yes, they said it was Operation Pedestal. We learnt that when the skipper came back from the conference. That was the code name of the convoy. I think they give it a wrong number. They give it a South African number. But I think people that wanted to know already knew where she was going. Apparently, when they were loading cargo in Liverpool, there was some cargo on the dockside in crates marked Malta, which was a bit of a giveaway. And this was, it was confirmed, I believe, by the government that this had happened, like, so. Careless talk costs lives, but, you know, it's one of them slip-ups that they make.
Seeing such a very large number of Royal Naval vessels obviously would tell you that you were going into some problems. You could anticipate.
Yeah, but we felt pretty sure that the size of the escort, you know, would deter anything that was going to bother us, sort of thing. But.
So you crossed the Bay of Biscay, presumably. Is that the route you took?
Yes, we spent a few days out in the Atlantic practicing zigzag courses, and the carriers flew the craft past us time and time again so that we would know our aeroplanes from the enemy ones, which was a great exercise. And then we had firing the guns like practicing, and we had a good drilling before we got down there to down to the bay and down to Jib.
And firing the guns, did you have a role in that? Oh, no, not actually firing them, but
no, I was just filling the pans for the Orlicans. That's all, filling the magazines. The gunners were there, all there aboard. Then they were using doing the firing, just to make sure the guns were working. That's all.
As part of the practice and drill, were you trained, as it were, to take casualties. Was there some preparation on board for a casualty centre?
No, we never seemed to bother with anything like that. The man on the ship, if you wanted anything, you went and saw the steward, and you got a dose of black draught or whatever you wanted, headache pills, toothache.
You didn't have a doctor on the Hawaii?
No, you had no doctors, no.
What do you recall of the journey down to Gibraltar?
It was, we were fortunate, we had good weather all the way. Just a normal bit of a swell on, nothing. It's comfortable journey down to Gib.
What day did the convoy start, by the way?
Well, the second... No. The 10th of August, when we passed Gib.
You didn't stop there?
We didn't. Midnight, 10th of August. It was a little bit hazy, and we steamed through a Spanish fishing fleet in the Straits of Gibraltar. It was stretched out between Gibraltar and Morocco. Of course, they were all well lit up. They were just, I don't know if they were all at anchor or not, but we steamed through them anyway. There was no bother with them, and nobody hit anybody or anything like that. But it was pitch black, but with them being well lit up, you could see them miles away.
Having rounded and got into the Mediterranean, were you put onto more alert conditions?
Not for the first day, no. It was. You had lovely warm weather, hot weather. Everybody was stripped off. It was more like a cruise the first day. What more could you like? It's blue Mediterranean, hot weather. Yes, we thought we were in for a good time.
So what happened after that then, as you made your way across the Med?
We got warnings about keep lookouts for U-boats. But the first day was peaceful and quiet. It wasn't until the next day we had any trouble at all.
So what were your first indications that, you know, there was going to be trouble? What were the first signs?
It was dinner time on the 11th. Dinner time on the 11th, we were all up on deck sitting around just after dinner time, and lads were talking and smoking and joking, and we heard these four big noises, big thuds, and somebody shouted, "Look at the eagle," and when we looked across to where the eagle was, the aircraft carrier, there was four big towers of water, and she'd been hit by four torpedoes. She heeled over, we saw, we were a mile and a half away from her. We saw planes sliding off into the deck, into the water. She heeled over further, and within 5 minutes she'd gone. And that brought us back to life, that we knew we were in trouble then.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, you know, were your own personal feelings when you saw that happening?
Oh, it was a shock. It was a shock. Brought you back to reality.
And that came quite without warning, it was?
Quite without warning, yes. Everybody was just sailing along, peaceful, quiet.
What happened then? Did any vessels go to rescue the...
Destroyers went straight to her. Yes, there was two, three, maybe four. There was about three or four destroyers started swinging round her, but of course we swung away from the eagle on a new zigzag course, and the whole place became bedlam for a few minutes while we got ourselves sorted out.
Presumably alarms were then given.
All the klaxons, you could hear klaxons going all over the convoy.
What was the procedure for zigzagging, in the sense that how far would you travel on one course, then change it?
You would alternate between 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 12 minutes, 9 minutes. It was haphazard, you know. There was no, you couldn't lay to a pattern, or you couldn't remember it. You had to look at the code book to
pick up the signals.
To pick up what course to steer and when to steer it.
So the chap steering was very busy.
Yes. But of course, it was a fast convoy, and when you're steering a ship going fast, it's like steering a yacht, more or less. You touch the helm and the ship moves, whereas in a slow convoy, you can wrestle with the wheel to make the ship move.
So what was the next event that occurred?
The air raid warnings came then at tea time, and we saw the planes taken off from the carriers. They must have intercepted whatever enemy planes there's around. There was one or two got through, but they didn't do any damage.
Were these Germans or Italians? Did you know?
We didn't know. At the time, we didn't know. It's always written down since, but at the time, they were them. It was them and us.
So those that did get through, obviously, ships would fire away at
them. Everybody fired.
You would be involved in that, were you?
Yes, it was a regular barrage as soon as anything came into sight.
Was it just a question of aiming the anti-aircraft weapons at a plane, or was it kind of a box barrage?
There would be from the Navy ships, I think. We just aimed at what we saw, you know, sort of thing. If there was anything near, you fired at it.
And were you busy? I mean, when this is happening, you become particularly busy?
Yes, you're... As soon as your magazines are empty, you start filling them again for the gunners, passing them on. And it continues, it's a bit like a conveyor belt.
Was it exciting or scary to you personally?
At first it was a bit scary, but it became excited. And then later on in the convoy, it became boring. It became a bloody nuisance. So that, you know, the buggers wouldn't leave you alone.
So you've got the initial aircraft appearing. What happened next?
You were just waiting for darkness then. You were a lot safer in the dark. You were still on submarine watch, like, but it was the aeroplanes, it was the bugbear. You could see the aeroplanes, you couldn't see the subs. I think that's how you best sum it up.
And were you seeing interceptions by the carrier aircraft and dogfights going on?
Mostly in the distance. Mostly in the distance. If they did shoot anything down, you would see it going down. But they always intercepted them a good way off. It was just the odd ones that got through.
What aircraft were on the aircraft carriers?
I can't recall exactly. I remember at the time when we were recognising them all, we knew them all, but when I start looking back like that, it looks a bit misty.
So at the end of the first day of action, there's one aircraft carrier gone, and there's been a 10-by-aircraft to break through. And did you get to the darkness without any further mishap?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
And anything happened through the night?
Just warnings, that's all. Warnings. And there was no firing during the night.
About sleep and relaxation, did you get sufficient of that?
You just slumped where you were and catnapped. You weren't... The first night we did get a couple hours sleep on and off here. You nodded off and you, and of course we were still on the way, we were still watch keeping. Your 4 on and 8 off watches were continuing on. Men went up to the wheel and lookouts. And
did you feel that at that time, did you feel that there's going to be bigger do tomorrow, bigger problem tomorrow?
Yes, once we'd seen the eagle go down, you know. We're talking among ourselves and we thought, well, hell, if she goes down, what chance have we got, sort of thing. But later on, once you got into the action, you never thought about it.
I mean, I say
you were kept that busy.
You were sitting on a powder keg, in a sense. Only it wasn't powder; it was oil. I mean,
well, the nearly all were, all the ships in the convoy. They all had, if they didn't have oil or aviation spirit, they would have ammunition. So everyone was a potential bomb.
The following morning, what happened?
Air raids.
Did they come in particularly early?
Round about breakfast time. Yes, just before breakfast, when the klaxons went. Just getting ready to sit down to your breakfast, and you've had it. You're up on deck. And they continued most of the morning on and off. You would get some coming from the starboard side and fading away, and then some would come from the port side. The afternoon was the worst time, because when the sun was high, they used to queue up and come out in the sun at you, and you're looking up at the sun, you can't see them.
Anyone hit?
No, not during the mornings, no.
Were you able, in a convoy situation, to take evasive action?
You'd have to stick strictly to your course, because you were on a zigzag course, so if you veered off, you were going to hit somebody. No, you kept strictly to your course and just fired away from wherever you were.
Were these high-level bombers, or they weren't dive bombers?
Came down low. The torpedo bombers, late in the afternoon when they got through, they come down very low. They fly over the top of your masthead height.
Were you personally attacked? Your ship, I mean, was it personally in action now?
Just with near misses. We never hit during the day. No.
This is your first, basically your first experience of action of this kind, of danger.
Any sort of danger, imminent danger, yes. We'd seen odd things in other convoys. Like during the night you would see a big flash going off where a ship or something had been hit, but it was away from you, you know, you weren't involved with it, but this lot, you couldn't avoid it.
So you would be personally seeing these bombs and torpedoes flying at you.
Oh, yes.
Did you realise that the enemy were particularly after you, being the
well, when you were the only tanker there, so you were a prime target. You know, you had no defence. You just had to sit in the middle and hope and pray when you got time.
But did you get through the second day without being caught?
No, that was when we got caught.
How did that, what happened then?
It was after tea time. And the Nigeria, she was hit. And a couple of minutes after, the Cairo, both cruisers, she was hit. And about a minute after that, we were hit. There was three torpedoes. They do say there was four fired and three hit targets. Nigeria swung round and went away off course. The Cairo, she stopped, and eventually we stopped. The skipper told the engineer to stop the engines because we were swinging out of line and there was a chance of colliding with somebody else. So we stopped, and we had an enormous fire, the flames going mast high and a plume of water going up with it. And the water came down. We were still underway, so the water just came down on the after part of the deck and drenched everybody. And of course the fire was roaring. Some lads were making a beeline for the boats, a couple of gunners and a galley boy. But I think there was a blast of some bombers that came over, or the weight of the water from this big plume that had shot up in the air had broke the boat away or something, and the three of them ended up in the water. But we didn't know this till hours later.
They panicked, presumably.
I don't know if they panicked or they'd been near the boat or something like that. I don't know exactly what happened. It was never very clear. But I know they ended up in the water. So,
where had you been torpedoed?
In the port side, right in beam with the after main deck pump house. In a wing tank, and it's full of kerosene, and that's what took a light.
Were there any casualties?
No, not initially. I think one or two got burns on the hands and that, eventually with putting the fire out, because we were all busy passing fire extinguishers along from the bridge house and the centre castles and the after accommodation. We were running them along the flying bridge along to the pump house.
And what kind of fire extinguishers were these?
Oh, they were big ones. We had some like a big fire engine thing on that they use on the fire engines or somewhere I've seen, where they're on like a wheel and you can wheel them. They have like a wheel on the bottom. Other ones, you just carried them. They were pretty heavy, but you just grabbed hold of them and carried them, you know, you weren't...
Were they chemical fire extinguishers?
Chemical, yes, aye.
And was there had you practiced and trained in a fire drill at all?
Well, some ships you did lifeboat drill regular, and some ships did fire drills, but not a great deal. But you did use hoses and things on a the deck crew wash the ship down regularly. You're always washing the ship down, and it was second nature to you to running hoses out and things like that. But in this case, it would have been no good because the pipeline for the main seawater had been broken when the explosion took place. The blast hit the flying bridge, the side of the flying bridge, which carried some pipes away, and it also carried the hydraulic steering gear away. The hydraulic pipes were running alongside that side of the flying bridge, along to the engine room, and we couldn't control the ship by steering from the bridge.
So what? How did you go into an emergency steering situation?
Well, you've got to go along after the steering flat itself, where the steering engines are, and couple them up to an emergency steering wheel, which is on the poop deck, which unfortunately is out of sight of the bridge, so you can't wave to anybody or signal them. But there was one telephone line working, which you used when you were docking ship, or if you wanted to talk to anybody on the after deck. It was on the housing on the after deck, and the bridge used that to tell the man at the auxiliary steering wheel what to do. And that way they eventually got the engines going and the steering gear going. And we rigged auxiliary steering gear as well down in the steering flat. We've got chain blocks you can operate, pulling the quadrant from side to side. But in the event it proved too heavy. But the emergency wheel did the job on instructions from the bridge. But you couldn't steer in there exactly a straight line. You went a little bit maybe to port and a little bit to starboard. But you got heading in the right direction eventually.
So the only thing you had then to put the fire out was the chemical...
The extinguishers.
You didn't have access to the
sea. We didn't have access to any seawater or hose pipes, no.
Were you able to do that? Were you able to contain that fire?
Yes, in the end we contained the fire.
What was your role in this? What were you doing at this time?
Just humping fire extinguishers along.
And someone else was using them?
There was somebody down on the main deck, you see. We just load them down on the main deck and they were using them.
You'd have little time then to think in terms of what was happening to you.
No, you didn't know what was going on around you. You didn't know that somebody else had been blown over the side at the same time as the torpedo struck. That was Ray Morton. He was washed over the side.
And was he killed? Did he?
No. He was picked up. He was in the water about an hour and a half or something like that, along with the other two lads who were on the opposite side of the ship. Apparently they eventually saw one another when they were in the water, and HMS Bicester came along and picked them up. But they never reached Malta. They were taken back to Gibraltar. The decks were awash with survivors and off the eel, and they took some men off the Nigeria as well.
And she was ordered back to Jib?
She was ordered back to Jib, yes.